everyone, and welcome to episode 553 of the MTG Goldfish Podcast. I'm Seth, probably better known as Saffron Olive, and we have the full crew here this week, kicking things off with the owner of MTG Goldfish, Richard. How are you this fine Monday, Richard?
Good morning, Seth. Caught up on my Marvel movies. I finally watched Thunderbolts. I'm all back into superhero mode here.
Dude, that's the best one of this year.
I heard that. I specifically avoided Kraven and Venom, okay?
I know this is going to sound...
Thanks for reminding me those exist.
The ones relevant to the upcoming Magic set, avoided. Thunderbolts, yeah. Okay.
Wait, so Thunderbolt hasn't been in Magic set yet. So I don't know who that is. Is that like just another Marvel superhero?
Are we? I didn't know who that was. Magic set. That's the beauty of MCU. They introduce you to random people you didn't care about. But it's a Black Widow's family.
Interesting.
They made appearances in the Black Widow movie. But yeah,
it's a bunch of like people who need a second shot, right? And so like that's the idea. It used to be like reformed villains in the comics, but the movie is a little bit friendlier. So you know, naturally, but I think it's pretty cool. It's one that tackles like literally the embodiment of, you know, darkness and depression and all of that into one, and it's a very strong third act. So touches on heavy topics. So that was why I like this movie a lot.
And you're hearing that, of course, from our other co-host, Grim. Good morning, Grim. How's it going today?
Pretty good. I lost my voice. I was yapping all day long yesterday. So, yeah, after like 12, 13 hours of yapping, I'm a little hoarse.
Yeah, yapping will do that. It has a tendency to do that. Anyway, today, we're going to be jumping around a little bit. So, we got some standard news as far as maybe some bannings coming up that we're going to get into. Maybe talk a little bit about what sets are coming up next year. Some speculation there, because it's going to be announced in Atlanta in a couple weeks. We got some more Spider-Man news, Spider-Man layer drops, Spider-Man box prices bouncing around, the lack of foils. The Through the Omen Path set reaction, I think, is really interesting. So, we're going to talk about that, jump around a little bit, answer some fish mail. Before we do, though, a reminder that today's show is brought to you by Card Conduit, and Card Conduit's the easiest way to sell your Magic cards. If you ever get tired of the hassles of buy listing, you can skip them with Card Conduit. You can use your curated service where you send in as many cards as you want with a buy list value of $1 or more and pay just a 5% service fee. And if you want to do a bit of work, you can use our sorted service where you list and sort your cards in advance and pay just a 2% fee. Either way, you're going to get a detailed report with the results and a fast payment once your order is processed. And you can even get another 10% off by heading over to cardconduit.com/mtggoldfish. Card Conduit, it's the easiest way to sell your Magic cards. So thank you to Card Conduit for supporting the show. And let's talk some Magic. And let's start with what I think is maybe the biggest piece of news of the week. So there's been a lot of speculation about what's going on in Standard. The Soul Cauldron deck being dominant, Mono Red rising up to maybe try to fight against that deck. It's a pretty busted format. And it's been a big conversation in the community. But last week, Wizards finally weighed in on it and finally spoke about what they think about Standard. And Richard, what's the TLDR from WotC on this?
They're like, yes, we heard your concerns. We're moving up the ban list announcement from November 24th to November 10th. So they moved it 2 weeks. And yes, that is still 2 months away. And then they said that we're looking at VV and Soul Cauldron, but we think Standard can fix itself, whatever, blah, 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 blah. But for 2 months, we're going to get this at least. And their reasoning was it doesn't disrupt the RCQ season while trying to move it up. So they moved it up 2 weeks, essentially. I thought this was a very bad announcement, but just say nothing. Like they just should say nothing, right? Once you tell everyone that it's going to be a dead format for a while, that just locks in and confirms that you don't need to go to FNM or play Standard or do anything for 2 months. So I thought that was a little weird, and why even bother with these 2 weeks at this point, you know? Like what's the just ride it out to the 24th, that, you know, if you're going to do this, right? Like kind of reminds me of that banning right before rotation, you know, like I don't know, like you waited 2 years,
it's a very bad,
you're gonna ride it out for like a couple
month,
more weeks.
Yeah,
weird.
Yeah, this is a really weird one. I think I partially agree with you that like announcing that we're in a lame duck Standard is like probably not wise. I know they're concerned about disrupting RCQ season, but if people don't want to play, that would also disrupt RCQ season. So it's like kind of a weird choice to it because they essentially announced, I don't want to say they announced that they're going to ban Vivi, but here's their exact quote from the article. "We believe we will likely take action in November. Vivi Artist here is warping the standard format and likely needs to go. We're unsure about Agatha's Soul Cauldron." But then they did say, "We don't think the format's reached its final form, which would give us the clearest direction to get standards set up for long-term success." So that definitely sends the message that Vivi is likely to get banned in November. What do you think, Grim? Is it better to just, like, say nothing and hope that people figure it out and keep showing up? Or was this an attempt of Wizards to be like, all right, we hear you, we do get the feedback, we know something, you know, is a little bit wonky right now, and we're listening to you, even if they're not going to make any changes immediately?
I mean, I think it's just communication, right? I don't see the main deal here. I do like that they're being communicative, because then now if I'm thinking about buying into Vivi, I'm not, right? I'm very easily not going to touch that. And it's for sure, it's in paper, it's in writing. But like, I think it's good. I think it's a good thing to be communicative about this. And like, because I asked some people that are my friends and creators in other TCG spaces, right? And like, let's just go with a game. I won't say which one, but by Konami, right? By Konami. And their players are just like, bro, we have like a gray table in the center of like a closet, and that's our like major event. And Konami never communicates with its player base. We never know anything. There's just bannings out of nowhere. Is it better to just like say nothing and just ban whenever you do it? I don't know. I mean, I like the communication personally. Just because Then I know I won't have to like buy into it, even though I'm sad because
you love.
I know that.
I know.
It's unlikely. It's unlikely though, Seth. Because here's the thing: I believe that it should be Cauldron that goes, but I you know, like,
I'm on the other side of that one. Personally. Do you think that's just your pro Vivi bias? Like, if Vivi was not your favorite character, would you still pick Cauldron just for like gameplay purposes?
Yeah, I would still choose Vivi. I just don't. I think that Vivi as a threat is like solid. It's not bad. Obviously, it's a very strong card. But I think that it is oddly just an okay card. If without Cauldron, Cauldron is what pushes it over into like realms that are absurdly busted. So
I would argue the other side, that I think in terms of fun, Soul Cauldron is a more fun card than Vivi. Vivi, it's just like a prowess thing. Like, you cast spells. We've seen a million cards like it. Agatha Soul Cauldron is such a unique effect that that's the part that makes me like Cauldron more than Vivi and wants Cauldron to stick around. Although when it comes down to it, I will accept either option. Richard, what do you think on this?
What? Krim is not being unreasonable here, right? It's Vivi, you just fire off a spot removal spell and you're done with it. Cauldron is the problematic piece, and it has potential to break with the next problematic piece, right? Like it is the ongoing issue. And then we also got Vivi at home as well, that's coming up in Spider-Man as well. But I think Cauldron is actually the thing, and I actually think that's the one they hit, so they don't hit their precious Universes Beyond, you know, all-star character. But either one will kill the deck, so take your pick.
Does this article change your thoughts on that at all? Because it seems like just reading this article at face value, they call out Vivi is likely to be banned. Soul Cauldron, we're not sure about. Does that make it seem like maybe the IP doesn't matter and like Wizards isn't looking at it like we need to ban the in-universe? Because I assume that too, that they would rather ban the in-universe card than the out-of-universe card. It just is easier and working with your partners. But this article made me think maybe they don't view it that way, or maybe I'm reading too much into one paragraph in this big article.
I think this is good, right? Like, by the way, this is good for us to know, because I think one of the things we are worried about is like, can they ban something from another IP, right? Like, will they actually be willing to do it? So if they do ban Vivi, this shows that they're willing to ban whatever it is, no matter where it's from, as long as it's good for the health of the game. And I think that is a good thing to read and see that Vivi's even in the discussion, because before the meme was what, they'd ban the opt and everything, all other 56 cards before they banned the thing from the other IP, right? So right. If they are willing to at least discuss it, this shows that it's on the table. And if they ban Vivi, that's the most flavorful thing they could do for Vivi, you know, because it's all about Vivi. You know, in the game, you just, what kind of legacy do you leave behind, and will you have made an impact? And Vivi will always be remembered, and this will be great. So, yay, it's even flavorful if they ban Vivi.
What? Okay. I mean, yeah, dude. I don't know why Crib loves Vivi so much and why it needs to be a powerful card to be, like, are you saying your love for Vivi is tied to its power? What if it sucked?
I would love Vivi no matter what, but it,
yeah,
is humorous.
So it doesn't really matter. But you know Wizard's not happy about it. The fact that they stated Vivi in this article means it's like 95% chance to go, right? Because if it wasn't likely, they wouldn't say that because it hurts Vivi. You know what I mean? Like, everyone reads this like, oh, Vivi's going to go, right? They wouldn't make that insinuation if it wasn't going to be the case. But you know they're never happy banning their mythic cards, you know, the face cards. Yeah. Like, even in-universe sets, right? They want to ban the common, right? And also, we are not happy. You know, like, if I banned your $2, you know, whatever random uncommon, you're not as mad at me than if I banned your playset of Vivis, right? So they want to ban the cheaper card, not just for their sales, but for literally us, right? For the feel bads of us. But yeah, I they're not happy about it. Will they do it? Push comes to shove, they'll ban anything. You know what I mean? Like, they're not going to let their game, like, burn into the ground, although they kind of are. but yeah, I think it's fine. The more interesting thing, I think, is the communication. And Krim says it's okay, but I don't really think it's okay. You know, you go to the doctor and they're going to give you, like, a shot or something. They're not like, look at the needle. It's coming. I'm going to count down 5, 4. They're like, Krim, how was your day? Did you watch the latest Spider-Man? And then they just inject you while you're, like, mid-sentence and distracted. I feel it's such an unfavorable announcement. They need to just come in hot and, like, do it and, like, get it out. Because, yes, you save people from buying VVs, but anyone who's following the news is already holding off, right? But you're making sure that nobody play standard until November 10th, right? Like, you're not gonna pick up a deck. Maybe you're gonna buy Spider-Man and you're like, oh, I want to play Spider-Man or Through the Omen Pass, right? You're like, ah, but I don't know what's going on because Vivi's not being banned until the 10th, right? So I'm just going to wait until the 10th and then see what happens. And I feel that has much more negative effect on the game than, you know, RCQ players being surprised on November 24th that their VV got banned. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. It seems just bad to announce, like, hey, dead format for 2 months. Go at it, boys. Right? Like,
yeah, I mean, we saw that happen with Nadu, right? Where everyone knew Nadu was getting banned. Wizards, in a similar way, had said some stuff that definitely suggested that they knew Nadu was going to be banned, but that they weren't going to move off the ban list date. So we had to wait like 6 weeks until we got to the ban list. So we had the same like dead period of the format, and it led to less people playing Modern when more people should have been playing, because it was a release of the hype set, Modern Horizons 3. It should have been when Modern was booming, but instead everyone was feeling kind of like, down about Modern. So I do think there's risk to announcing it that way. I wanted to ask you, Krim, because I know you used to be a Sweat Lord, and as someone who used to play in tournaments and qualify for things,
Sweat Lord,
like, how much would something getting banned during the middle of a RCQ season matter? Like, how much does that really matter to the people playing RCQs? If you're someone living that lifestyle, are you like, I'd like to see a fresh meta? Or are you like, I've been practicing with Vivi for 2 months. Don't you dare make me change my decks right now. Like, what's the Sweat Lord perspective on that?
If it comes from the angle of anyone like playing the tier one deck that's getting banned and everyone that's also preparing for the tier one deck, right? Like, so if I'm bringing some deck, my entire sideboard is prepared to fight Vivi, that also messes up my game plan as well, right? So I think it's a big hiccup, but I think with the way Magic has gone recently competitively, pros are kind of used to scrambling last second for random things, right? So I think the banning would just be kind of like super disruptive for the process, but at the same time, I don't know, if you're for pros, they just move on to the next deck, right? It is annoying having to scramble. So like, if this were me, I wouldn't care too much about anything other than, okay, what's the next best deck to play then? And I think that's Dimir. But I think the funny thing is, I think this whole banning, by the way, we're talking about Vivi, we're talking about Cauldron. On top of that, I think they're just going to ban more than that. I think it's going to be another, because you also have to remember that I think they have to ban more than that, because they also know that Dimir midrange is also just going to naturally float back to the top. It's already, it's been winning with Vivi in standard. So why wouldn't it, right? Like, because otherwise the post Vivi meta is going to be like blue white artifacts, blue white control, and then like Dimir midrange. And like maybe whatever this, the red deck, I don't know if it'll still stick around because, you know, it's got that Viper, it's got all these things that are reliant on a deck that's running a bunch of cheap spells.
So, it's very targeted at the VV matchup, yeah.
So that's where like shaking up and like banning all of this, if you ban it early and abruptly out of nowhere, it does make all the prep work that I've done really, really feel like for nothing. But, you know, this is where it's going to differ from pro to pro player, where some will be like, thank God, because I don't want to deal with that deck anymore. And then there's just those that are just more so, it doesn't matter what the best deck is, but I was prepared for it.
So the other interesting part of this article I wanted to ask you guys about before I move on to other stuff. So I have really not liked how they handled banning since they announced 3-year rotation to standard, where they announced they're like, we're adding more sets to standard, we're not going to have sets rotate as often, and we only are going to ban cards once a year. And I was like, there's just no way that can work. You can't power creep and print a million sets and never ban anything. That's not logical, WotC. So WotC says in this article that we think that we got the timing of their ban and restricted windows wrong this year. In next year, they're going to have more ban list updates. They're going to have, hopefully, their idea is to have one with every major set release, which would be 6 a year, because we're getting 6 major sets a year. So basically every 2 months, rather than this schedule for this year, which is sometimes it's 4 months, sometimes it's 2 months, we never know. But then they also doubled down at the end of the article by saying, also, we're not changing our philosophy on bannings. We still really only want to ban cards once a year. What do I make of this? Like, is this me celebrating because I'm like, yes, they actually get it and we got to ban stuff more? Or is this just like, I don't know, adding more announcements for the sake of adding announcements and they're not actually going to ban anything? Do you think this solves the problem, Richard?
Are you saying they're just yapping?
Possibly.
I feel like they're just yapping. Like, look, you have 200 words to fill up this press release so that standard players don't rebel. Like, okay, look, like, what is the point of, if you're going to have like so, okay, if you're going to have so many announcements for bannings, what is the point? You might as well just say there is no announcement, and then when there is something, we will quote unquote emergency ban it, and we'll give you like 2-week notice. You know what I mean? I think that's all they need to do, right? Like, whenever we feel the metagame is out of whack, we will make an emergency announcement, and we will give you guys like 2 weeks to, you know, notice so that you have time to switch decks and then call it a day, right? Because you're getting awfully close to that with 6 potential windows every year, and then most of the time they'll do nothing anyway, and then sometimes they'll do something and they're trying to keep it once a year. But again, I said this last episode, this is all like nonsense, right? We are all complaining about their apology. Like, balance the game up front, right? It is very difficult right. to balance the game by removing things and not adding things at the same time. Like Krim just said, if we ban Vivi, Dimir rises, then what? You're going to ban Dimir? And then what, right? Like, just random stuff is going to happen. They need to be able to add and subtract at the same time. And that happens in R&D, right? So don't nitpick over the apology. Let's nitpick on the thing that got us to the apology, which was fire design, R&D, whatever it is, right? You can blame the no block structure. You can blame fire design or whatever. I don't know what it is, but fix that, right? And then personally on this apology aspect, just emergencies. That's it. There's no window. And whenever they feel like something needs to be done, tell us and give us like, you know, 2 weeks notice or 3 weeks, whatever you feel is the appropriate amount of time for people to react, right? Because that's all you need, right? You need to know like, oh, I need to get a new deck. And I don't want to know I need to get a new deck like literally 2 hours before my Grand Prix, right? So, you know,
right.
Ensure that there is some window and then we're done. As opposed to this, no changes, no changes, no changes. Oh, we got to move this by 2 weeks. Changes, right? Like, what did that accomplish?
I'm curious. So, one thing Wizards has mentioned is when they did no schedule bannings in the past, they thought it was really chaotic, and they felt like it just led to a constant call for and conversation about bannings. Because if you could ban something anytime, why don't you express what you think it needs to be banned? Because maybe it'll actually get banned. So part of the reason they went to a schedule was to try to, from Wizards, from what they've said in past articles, to try to minimize that conversation, make people feel comfortable buying their cards, not worrying about their cards getting banned. But if we have a ban list update every other month, isn't that roughly the same in terms of how much confident? Like, isn't that conversation still going to be happening if every 2 months we have a ban list update? So I'm not sure that it, doing a ban list update every 2 months solves that problem any better than just doing it, as Richard was saying, as like a surprise thing with a couple weeks notice whenever something needs to change. So I'm not sure, like, I'm glad they're going to have more announcements, but I'm not sure that actually fixes one of Wizards' problems with the pass system, which is the constant conversation about bans. But anyway, what do you think? Any final thoughts on bannings and stuff before we move on?
They tried to solve complaining on the internet. You know, let me tell you, Wizards, you can't do it. So just let it be. Do what you think is right. People will complain no matter what. But, you know, you got to cut. You have all the data, right? Like, it doesn't matter what random Reddit thread says. What matters is your large-scale standard events are empty. That standard FNMs are not firing. That no one is actually playing competitive Magic. Like, those you can see, and those are not subjective, right? They're objective, and they need to fix that, right? And if people have to complain in the meantime, just let them. But, you know, complain all you want if I go to my full standard event, right? But actually, we're going to an empty standard event. I can't complain to anyone because no one is there, right? So, yeah, they gotta fix that.
Yeah, that is, attendance is the biggest thing when it comes down to it. Well, let's move on and talk a little bit about Spider-Man, because it is almost release time. We got the full set. We talked about spoilers. We're waiting for the official release. I believe early access should be this week, and then pre-release events and the release. But I'm very curious. One of the weirdest things to happen in the past week was they spoiled the Through the Omen Pass set. And if you don't know what Through the Omen Pass is, the Spider-Man set is the first set where Wizards couldn't or didn't get the IP to make digital versions of those cards. So we're getting Spider-Man in paper, and then on Arena and on Magic Online, we got the Through the Omen Pass set, which we knew was happening. We talked about that in the past. But what happened this week that caught me by surprise is if you looked on Magic social media, the Magic Reddits, the Through the Omen Pass set, and specifically one character, which is Fleam, which is the backside of the Green Goblin as far as the Spider-Man card. But Fleam just took over Magic Internet. It was literally at one point, the entire Magic Reddit was just full of meme posts of different Fleam art and Fleam jokes. So the response to this Through the Omen Pass set has been really positive, at least with this super online, super dedicated group of Magic players. And I'm curious what you guys think of this. Is this a genuine love of Fleam and Through the Omen Pass? Is this people not liking Spider, the same crowd that doesn't really like Spider-Man or is anti-UB, and this is a way they can express it by memeing with Fleam against the Spider-Man set? What do you think of the response to this Through the Omen Pass set? Because I was expecting it to be basically nothing. Like, when we get Alchemy spoilers and they kind of come and go in a few hours and people don't really pay attention to them because it's digital only. But in this case, this became a really big thing. So what do you make of the response to the Omen Pass set?
You remember how a while back I talked about the Cute Watch, where it's filled with little critters that are creepy and weird?
Mm-hmm.
I think this rounds out the weird watch, the Cute Watch or whatever, right? So I love Green Goblin. I also love Fleam. I think Fleam is just a silly guy, and I think they need to do more. My concern is they don't. My concern is that this is the last time we see Fleam, because we've got Skrelv, we've got Fleam now, we've got Fibblethip, Tony Bones, and then we got Loot. These are the five colors and the five little weird cute critters. Please bring back Fleam. Do not, you got to do what you got to do, but do not only use him for Through the Omen Paths. I want actual Fleam to be in the game. So I like this, and I love Green Goblin, right? So, like, I freaking love how silly and goofy he looks. I get the memes. He is adorable. So I think this is the internet also showing you, though, that the Cute Watch could work, man.
It is one thing that struck me that was super funny is like Wizards tried so hard to make people like loot, and people like it was a very like divisive card where some people loved it, other people don't like loot. And then this card, they didn't even want to make. Like, they would much rather just have Green Goblin be on Arena if they had the choice. They didn't even really want Fleam to exist. And they accidentally made a character that seems like the entire community, at least the very online community, absolutely loves. So they, like, accidentally made what I think they tried to make loot make, but you couldn't do it when you were trying to do it because it didn't come across as authentic. But when you accidentally do it, it actually works really well. But, Richard, what do you make of this? Like, do people just love through the Omen Pass? Or what is this all about?
They're coping so hard, but who am I to take away? If you find joy in something, like, go for it, right? It's just a meme, right? Like Colossal Dreadmaw, like Stormcrow. And I think Wizards will bring this back in a real card because they always do the nods to the memes, right? So, you know, Colossal Dreadmaw, whatever. Will this become the poster child of Magic? Doubt it, right? But they will definitely bring it as a real card to paper, essentially, at some point. But I think when we saw it through the Omen Pass, we were like, not terrible. You know, you would have expected like a lot. You were like, was it going to be like all
Nick
Biggers or like absolute garbage? Like, no. Right. But this overly like everyone is like so expressive in their love of Omen Paths and like how Wizards did such a great job given the restrictions, like. They're coping really hard, which is fine, right? You know, like, you can enjoy it, but I don't know why you gotta hate on Spider-Man so hard, you know what I mean? Like, you're in a tough spot because I don't know what you do, right? Because there's no real way to show your approval of OM1, right? Because if you go ahead and grind Arena and spend all your money on, let's say, Fleam Cosmetics or something like that, right? And be like, yes, you know, I love Omen Paths. I want Wizards to make more. What will they see this? And they're like, okay, great. We can make Universes Beyond and split it off and give it a second set at Arena and it still sells like crazy, right? That's not what you want to tell them. Let's say you boycott Arena. You're like, this is trash. I don't want you to split my IPs and do this weird stuff. And then they're going to be like, well, everyone hates Omen Paths. That's the last time we do Omen Paths, right? No more in-universes version. That's also not the message you're trying to send. So you're in a tough spot for Universes Beyond haters. Like, I don't know what you're supposed to do here to show. Because we always say vote with your wallet. But it's like, I don't know. Like, all the voting options seem bad. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, if you like Fleam, all the more power. But to me, I see it like Colossal Dreadmaw. Like, no one is taking Colossal Dreadmaw seriously. Or like Yargle, right? But like, Wizards will continually give the nod to Yargle as like an inside joke. And I feel we're going to get inside joke Fleam a lot more. Like Fibblethip. Like, you know, there's a bunch of these like ongoing inside jokes in Magic the Gathering. And I'm sure we'll see Fleam as a paper version at some point in the future.
Yeah.
What if they listen and this becomes like that situation when the entire internet memed on Morbius? So Sony re-released Morbius.
What happened
to
that movie? What happened?
It bombed in theaters again.
It bombed again.
They actually memed so hard that Morbius actually got re-released. And for some odd reason, out of touch studio exec is like, guys, the internet loves this movie. I don't understand.
Opinions are cheap on the internet, right? You don't have to follow through. You're like, I love this. I'll go watch it. Nah, actually, I won't watch it. Joke's on you. You spent tens of millions or hundreds of millions or whatever to get this out there. And I was just beaming from my couch. Sorry, dude. Like, that's kind of what happened.
And it's
right?
Not yet. The internet, like, it's got its own language, almost like Magic. If you ever try to talk about Magic to someone that doesn't know Magic, they just like don't understand the words you're saying because it doesn't make sense to them. And the internet's kind of the same way. I think like people who are not on the internet miss how much irony there is on the internet and how ironic the internet can be in a lot of ways. And they end up taking that as something that's intended to be serious so that it goes very wrong.
So Fleam aside, what do you guys think of Omen Paths? Like, if they printed it as a, I don't know, let's say a secret layer. Let's say they made a secret layer. You can get one copy of each card or something, and they made it like relatively cheap. Do you think people would buy it? Do you think people are serious when they say, I would play this over Spider-Man and this is fire design and yada, yada, yada? Like, do you think people would actually do that? Or would this be the floppiest of flop products you've ever seen?
I think people would buy it just because I do know people do buy Universes Within, right? Like, just with Rick, Daryl, and, like, all the Walking Dead cards, right? But I think Omen, through the Omen Paths itself, look, we all know that it's a last-second thing, right? They had to stitch that together and make it look somewhat cohesive, but it doesn't look cohesive at all. It looks like just OTJ again. Right. And because like randomly Bloomborough animals are here, then there's spider, literal spider people.
Well, that's,
and
that's
so,
the flavor. It's through the Omen Paths.
Right, right, right. but like because of that, it looks bad. It looks bad. Right. It looks like very stitched together. And I don't know. It was just like, hey, give us something right now so we can just put it in the presser and then just release it because we just need anything at all.
Yeah, I mean, I think it definitely is a bunch of art that was probably, like, on the cutting room floor from past sets, Bloomborough sets, and Outlaws of Thunder Junction. I think there is also some new art probably commissioned for it, but I imagine some of it was art from past sets that they just didn't use. To answer Richard's question, though, personally, if I had the option to play Fleam or Green Goblin, I would play Fleam in my commander deck. So I would be one of those people who I think I would actually play the Omen Paths versions given the choice, just because I don't really have a connection to Spider-Man. At the same time, do I think that set would sell well? No, I think some people would buy it. But I think we've seen with the Secret Lair Universes Within reprints that we've gotten of some of those Rick Steadfast Leader, the Walking Dead cards. There's a few other ones from those early Secret Lair drops that we got the in-universe versions. It's not like those are super expensive and like chase cards that everyone
Rick
wants.
Rick still is expensive.
Rick is still expensive in both versions. That is true. But then there's also a lot of like 49-cent cards, 50-cent cards that are reprints.
The Stranger Things
versions.
Ones.
The Stranger Things. But yeah. So I don't think there's a huge demand.
Speaking of, funny that you mentioned that because like today I finally had my first run-in where somebody had Rick and the Universes Within version in their deck.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I'm like, ooh, yeah, you can't do that. I got bad news because you just spent $45.
Yeah, $45.
And you essentially have two Ricks.
Yeah, that would be another issue if they actually did print Omen Pass in paper. You'd have even more. There's some more cards that are like that, the more often that would happen to people. But I don't know. What do you think, Richard? Do you think this set would actually sell well if they print it in paper? I think like the 10% of people that really hate UB or hate Spider-Man would buy it, but the rest of people would not.
I think normal people would not buy this, but there may be the same Fleam rally where everyone who's like a UB hater go buy 10 collector boosters up through the Omen Paths.
To send them a message, yeah.
Just to send them a message.
That'll show up. We'll give them money.
I'd buy singles. Like, there's some actually... It exceeded my expectations of what this set would look like. Giant Craft Helm, which I think is Doc Ock's arms or whatever. Like, has some pretty cool art. Like, it gives you, like, that throwback of, like, just weird art that doesn't really fit in the Magic, like 90s-style Magic art. The spiders, like, a lot of the giant spider people look kind of cool, and I wanted to put it in my Ishkana deck or something if they're the right color identity, right? Not just, like, absolute garbage art. Like, there are a lot of TCGs, and a lot of them have absolute garbage art. And I thought we were going to hit like that level where they're just going to scrape together. But it turns out like the cutting room floor of Magic art, that bar is still pretty high. And when you take all of it, it's actually kind of decent, right? So I'm actually pleasantly surprised at Through the Omen Pass. I would not play it on Arena still. I'm probably not going to play the set on Arena. But it doesn't look bad. Like it wouldn't be like a complete farce that I thought it was going to be. So like,
Yeah, no, it turned out better than I expected. I will definitely give it that because I was worried it might be straight up stick people or whatever, and it way exceeded that. And there is some like super cool art there. So, speaking of Spider-Man, and things being expensive, I've been keeping track of Spider-Man collector booster prices because I think it's interesting. And plus, I did a video where I opened a bunch of collector boosters, and good Lord, did I get absolutely hammered. $800 a piece, these are way, way, way too expensive. But I've been keeping track of the prices and prices of Spider-Man collector boosters. And I know collector boosters aren't the most important because of play boosters, but I think they are important since they allow us to compare this set to previous sets and kind of track the high end of the market. But anyway, the set peaked at almost $1,000 back on August 19th, $986 for a collector booster box. And it has dropped down now. It is currently $745. It was under $700 a couple days ago. It was $665 at its low point. So we've seen a huge drop in prices of collector boosters. What do you guys make of this? What do you expect with this set moving forward? I was expecting the set to keep declining in price down to like maybe 500, somewhere between 500 and 600, I felt would be like probably a little bit higher than I want, but a relatively fair price for a collector booster box of the set. Do you think it's going to like, is it rebounding now with the jump in the last couple of days? Do you think it's going to trend back down? Do you have any thoughts on these collector box prices and what they mean?
Seth, I want to say, yo, rip. My chat told me about your video.
Oh, so
I saw
bad.
The video, and
oh,
your
goodness.
Best box was like -250 or something like that.
Oh, it was so bad. Yes, yes. I'm glad you can get a laugh out of it, Rip.
Okay, believe it or not, I feel like the most collector boxes now at the prices they're at, that's going to be the average experience. Yeah, as painful as it sounds, like it doesn't matter what Avatar will be the same. Personally, I think I was happy the boxes were dropping. I was hoping that boxes would just keep going lower and lower and
Me
lower
too.
Because I don't think I would not pay more than $250, $300 a collector's box. And even then, I don't want to spend that, right? So, like, I was so happy because this meant that the set, oh, man, like, I hope it's cheap as all heck, cheap as dirt, so I could actually get this stuff. Because I saw, like, the comic book foil of Eddie Brock is $500. You know, Tomer, that man's got some good luck. He's opened the Spider-Man comic book variant that I wanted. I was like, Tomer, yo, sell that. I'll take that off of you. What do you want for that? I was like, well, right now it's like $400. So I'm like, $400? Why? I thought everyone hated Spider-Man. I'll take it for $5, like right now. So I was hoping this set would just keep going lower and lower. And regardless of whether or not it does, I think at this point, any collector's box is $700 is not worth it. I think... Yeah. Anything like above like 400 is not worth it. And yeah, because you're going to have that exact experience that you had in that box opening where, dude, like negative, all you can hope for is that you break even.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's doing well. Like one of those, the box where I lost like $200-some, I opened literally three of the best cards in the entire set, like comic foil, Peter Parker, and all this stuff. There were like three cards that were like $150 or something, a couple of $50 cards. And still, when I added it all together, it was not even especially close to adding up to the box price. And that was like the best of the boxes. Richard, you keep track of some of this finance stuff. What do you see here?
Hmm. I mean, it's exactly the same as Final Fantasy, right? When we open Final Fantasy boxes, we got our face wrecked in as well. And then what happened, right? The singles came out, and then the surge foils went through the roof, and consequently, the collector boxes went through the roof, and they're at, I don't know what they are, like 1,300, like somewhere north of, you know, a grand.
Yeah, around there.
So it's really going to depend on if people want the cards. Now, Final Fantasy has the X factor of a serialized card, right? We have, I guess, the special Soulstone, but it's going to really depend on that. And this price means kind of nothing, right? Because let's say it turns out all of the comic book variants, the foil versions, are super expensive. Then these prices will just keep going up, the box prices. And then if they turn out to be dirt cheap because no one actually wants to buy them, then these prices go down. So we're going to have to see what the real demand for the thing is. But you always expect to lose money with opening boxes, right? Like some percentage. So it's not unusual. It's exactly like Final Fantasy so far. And the thing that surprised everyone was it kept going up, right? Everyone was like, yeah, offload all your surge foils. you know, this is pre-order prices. You know, we always know it goes down by 75% after. It's like, actually, it's going up. And art cards have value for some reason, right? And people are not actually selling their stuff, right? They're just hoarding it in their closet. Like, what is going on? But so far, all signs point that this behaves more like Final Fantasy and less like Edge of Eternities, right? It's not exactly one-to-one to Final Fantasy, but I would say it's closer to that end than it is to a normal in-universe set, right? Because a normal in-universe set, your collector booster would be, you know, $300 or whatever, right?
Yeah.
So
I got to say also one thing. This might be a slight change. Maybe we could talk about it later. But did you all see that Final Fantasy on Switch 2, if you buy it, you get a Final Fantasy pack inside.
It's a play booster, right?
Yeah,
it is a play booster.
Yeah.
I mean, that is crazy to think about. Like there is a we've always talked about IPs, other brands coming into Magic, but it's actually kind of cool to see Magic actually going to the other IPs now, right? So it's like, yo, imagine you're doing a random level in the new Fallout, and they're just playing Magic, right, in that level or something like that. Or maybe this is a chance where, I don't know, some Marvel comic and writes about Magic or something. Because I think IDW or somebody right now is publishing, no, Dark Horse is publishing the new Elspeth comic book that's coming out. So, I don't know. I think that's pretty cool, by the way. That's just a minor detail, though. I thought that was really sweet to see.
It is, yeah. I mean, it definitely is cool to see Magic showing up in other people's games now a little bit, which is something that I think people talked about when Universes Beyond was first announced. Like, oh, it'd be nice if we could see Magic show up someplace else and it's not just Magic always taking in the other IPs. So it seems like good promotion that people who buy the Final Fantasy game, maybe they don't even know what Magic is and they're going to by default learn about it because of this promotion. So it seems like a pretty positive promotion. Would have been sweet if it was a collector booster, but then I guess though,
if it was collector booster, it would be news. Play booster is like, okay, fine, great.
With how much I pay for video games nowadays, 70 for like a AAA title, I better get one collector booster. Yeah.
I mean, do you know how many, like, it would be the best-selling game of all year. You know what I mean? If they did that. You know what I mean?
That would be the cheapest way to get a collector booster, yeah.
Literally nothing, and everyone would go buy it. Buy the game, right? Because like the game is what? I don't know how much Switch games are nowadays. $60 to $80.
That's like $70. $70.
That's less than a collector booster price. So yeah. I get a free game with my collector booster, right? So they would actually.
Could you imagine
have, like the greatest thing, game of the year? Right,
you would have Magic players just going in and buying out the game and like dumping it in the trash on the way out the door and just getting the boosters.
It'd be we never talked like about that on the podcast, right? McDonald's Pokemon,
yeah,
right? Where. They had to stop the promotion because people would come in. So in Japan, they sold Pokemon cards with McDonald's, Happy Meals. And for the first time, they have unique cards. So usually it's just like reskin cards and it's like whatever. And people were literally just buying Happy Meals, like tons and tons of Happy Meals to get the cards and just like trashing all the food, and there's like this massive dumpster of like wasted food because no one cared about the food, and they're like, oh my goodness, and they had to pull the promotion, right? But like PSA 10 Pikachus, they're like 20 grand or something, right? Like the QA on these cards is like crazy bad as well, so to get a 10 is very difficult. The price is crazy expensive. And my One Piece McDonald's promo has been held off because they're like, what do we do? We can't have people dumping all the food. This Pokemon thing was a disaster. So we got to hold off and figure out how to do this.
Wait.
But yeah, they sell whatever, right?
That has to be a hugely successful promotion, though, right? Like, think of all the people they got in there. Like, wouldn't that be
too
successful?
Too good for themselves, right? Like, it looks very bad, right? They need to figure out how not to waste all this food, right? Because at the end of the day, people just took all this McDonald's and put it directly into the trash, right? And you're like, well, that's not efficient use, right, of
people
food.
Are just gonna throw the Final Fantasy game into the trash right after
would, would you not? Like, let's say the game was $50 or $60 and they had a collector booster. Wouldn't you just buy 10 and not play 10, like, what are you going to do with 10 Final Fantasy cartridges? Yeah. You're not going
to
play them.
Go to GameStop, get 20, to, get 5% of my purchase back. And actually, I would buy it at GameStop after getting the pack. I would immediately hand them the game. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, and they would give you $2 back because that'd be the price of the game. You know
best
what I mean?
Best I can do is $1.50.
Back to the Spider-Man set. I had one more question about it. So one thing I didn't realize until I started cracking open those collector booster boxes is there's really no special foiling in this set. I know we talked about like Surge Foil Sephiroth or whatever. In the Final Fantasy set, there was like a pretty clear hierarchy of like base version, foil version, special foil version. This set, though, the like super rare, we don't even know how rare, but the serialized card rare Soulstone is a special foiling. And then the costume change Spider-Man, which are also like incredibly scarce, have a special foiling. But there's no like Surge Foil Eddie Brock, Surge Foil Peter Parker. You guys think that was a miss? Like, do you think it was a miss to not have another layer of foiling? It feels a little weird to bring this up because I've always argued that, like, we have too many variants on stuff and maybe being a little bit simpler is actually better. But after opening Final Fantasy and then opening Spider-Man, I found myself, like, looking at the Spider-Man cards being like, oh, is this a special foil? And then realizing, oh, wait, there are no special foils in this set at all.
I mean, I think that there should have been another a foiling, right? I wish that there was something in between the Soul Stone and the fancy Spider-Man, right?
Yeah.
And just a regular foil. But I would have been okay with just an etched foil, right? Like, I wanted one more foil.
One more level of foiling. Yeah, like a
right
chase
in between.
Level of foiling there, yeah.
Yeah, like a Surge would have been nice, or that would have been kind of sick if they just did, I don't know, like, we kind of forgot about this because we kind of just went right past it. But do you remember Foundations, how we had that mana symbol foiling?
Oh, yeah. That looked really cool.
I like that. I wish we brought
that
back.
Oh, you could do
that
with the Spider-Man face. The
Spider-Man right, yeah, the
face
Spider
logo
was stamped down,
those,
right?
Yeah,
like,
that
could have
cool.
been cool. But yeah, that was about it.
I was just surprised because I assume they just do it every set, but this set they didn't do it for some reason. But what do you think, Richard?
They gave us different showcase treatments, right? Instead of giving us different foil versions,
that's
you have
fair.
The comic book art, the saga comics, the whatever.
So that's
you know,
a replacement.
Like, that's what they did. I feel that's better. Like, okay, you're phoning home about Surge foils, but does anyone care about Surge foils really? Like, some of the other foils I get, right? Like the Galaxy foils, I'm like, okay, it matches the space aesthetic, but like Surge foils in Final Fantasy were nothing interesting, right? They were just rarer and they just cost more, right? But like the actual effect was kind of bleh, right? So I would take comic book panel sagas over generic Surge foils, but I would have liked it better if they took the comic book panels and then also gave it a special comic book foiling.
Yeah, comic book foil.
I don't know what comic book foiling actually is, but like, you know, and only have that card in that foiling and call it a day, right? So if you want comic book art thing, that foiling and that's it. What is it?
I have the first printing of you know, Venom Lethal Protector back from the 90s, and that's back when comics did foiling.
Yeah.
You know how we complain about Wizards foiling curling? Guys, you don't want comic book foiling. That thing curls.
I mean, it's a much larger piece of paper.
That thing takes divine intervention to not curl up right there. Like, you gotta understand. No. I do agree with Richard, though. That is fair. Like, genuinely, that would have been sick if they just did something cool for comic book foiling. I don't know
what they actually needed. They needed the cell style, so the clear cards.
Oh,
like comic books did that for a while. Like, I remember now, I'm remembering back to my 90s covers, and like some of them had like pretty wild covers, right? Like the all foil ones, the cereal box foil where they just put like a square and it's like the holographic thing.
Yep.
But the cell style where it's a clear card and then you can see the panels.
Yep.
That would have gone hard. That would have gone hard.
That would have been super sweet. I was mostly thinking of it from like a value perspective. Maybe the comic book cards will fill that void, but I'm wondering if we're going to end up with, is there a $800, $1,000 version of Peter Parker or Eddie Brock or something, even without having like a super scarce foil version. But maybe it'll end up that the comic book versions will end up filling that same role and they'll end up being like expensive enough to kind of carry that. I guess we'll have to wait and see in a couple of weeks once we actually have the full set release.
We sound so sports card bros. Like, okay, here it is. Here's the Spider-Man. It has a thread from Tom Holland's Spider-Man suit worth like $5 billion. Here's yes. the one. You know what I mean? Like, you know how they're like cutting jerseys yeah. and they're like, here's a lock of Tom Brady's hair here. Okay, here we go.
Wait, but Richard,
like, we're kind of getting there again, right?
They could actually do that with Universes Beyond sets, right? There is a literal spider suit that someone wore in a movie that they could cut up and
it has lots of fibers. You can make so many cards.
Wow. But like, Richard, hear me out, okay? So you already have... you remember Marvel Legends and those figures? They give you a little piece and it assembles a figurine.
Yeah.
Every comic book version you open will be a little piece or a page or an ad from the first appearance, like Amazing Fantasy. So there it is. There's the stamp from Amazing Fantasy's cover that comes inside the pack. But there's no way to do that without weighing the pack, making the pack weigh more, actually. So never mind. That's math.
If you ever want to feel better about magic prices, watch a high-end sports opening. Because I swear to God, they have like $2,000 booster boxes that are actually just like a big case that has like one pack of like five cards in it. But they're all like, this is made out of someone's bat. This has their jersey in it. It was signed by four different people. But it's people paying like $2,000 for like a single pack of cards, which I guess makes $800 collector booster boxes actually look kind of cheap when you think of it that way.
Morrow's toenails coming back in the open paths, right? So if you buy Universes Beyond, you get Tobey Maguire's suit. Open paths.
Morrow's chop up one of Gavin's hats. Gavin hat. Clip it up. Yeah. All right. One last thing I wanted to ask you about before we get to a fish mail. And this actually happened a couple weeks ago, but we never talked about it. So when they announced the update of the rules for Edge of Eternities, there was a sneaky errata that kind of slipped through without getting a lot of attention. And that is to Rampaging Baylaw. So if you don't know Rampaging Baylaw, it's kind of an iconic six mana beast that when you have landfall, you get to make a 4/4 beast token. But the change here is the old version said, whenever a land enters under your control, you may create a 4/4 green beast token. Now it says when a land enters under your control, create a 4/4 green beast token. So you must create the beast token. I would imagine that this has to be for Arena, right? Like, the only reason I could see to make this change is if it says may, you have to click yes or no on Arena. If it doesn't say may, it's just going to happen on Arena. I'm curious what you guys think about this style of errata. Like, on one hand, does this change have an impact on like 99% of games Rampaging Baylaw shows up in? No, most times you're going to want to make the token. But there are fringe, you know, side cases where you might not want to make the token. Is it worth changing the wording on old cards specifically to make them work better in digital? You think that's actually like a good trade-off or a bad trade-off? And I keep going back and forth, so maybe you can help me make up my mind whether that's worth it or not.
Did they say it's for digital? They didn't say that, right?
That's our speculation. They didn't say it's for digital. That's my assumption, but they have not said it's for digital. I don't know why else you do it.
Cleaning up the UX of the game, like just to make things more smooth. I don't know, because there's so many May cards in Magic. Like, I can understand if they're like, there's no such thing as a May anymore. Like, everything has to automatically happen. So you can't miss triggers or whatever. And then you could like go back in time and fix triggers like more easily, right? But because there are tons and tons of May cards, I don't know what this actually accomplishes, right? Like, why does this card get the May removed, but like all the other cards can still May, right? And you know, there are cases where you will die. You know what I mean? Like, because you made creatures and you didn't want to make creatures. Like, there's some suture priest or something on the battlefield.
Right, there are
and
then, times.
Like, all these things will just kill you. Or, you know, insurrection is coming and this is not what you want. You know, I don't know, right? But I don't know. I think this somehow makes the rules less complicated, and that's what they're trying to do. But we have so many cards that say May that I don't know that this actually matters. Like, why bother? Why bother making this change, right? Given
like,
that,
why? What does this mean?
Like, for new cards, I understand, but why explicitly go back in errata old cards?
Right,
is it really Arena? They can also change Arena. You can have a toggle that says automatically do maze if it looks beneficial to me. You know what I mean? So I don't have to click a button, you know?
Auto mayor. We need an auto mayor that gets it wrong
10% of times, so you can never trust it, right?
Yep. Yeah. I don't know. I assume it's for arena. I couldn't come up with another reason, especially just for doing the one card. Like you said, if they changed all the maze, then I'd be like, okay, they're trying to like clean up the wording or something. But it made me think it had to be for arena. I remember this happening once before, I want to say, with a Johnny's Pride Mate. I feel like it was actually the same exact change where the original version of a Johnny's Pride Mate was when you gain life, you may put a +1/+1 counter on it. And then they changed it to you must put a +1/+1 counter on it. So I assume it's just to make digital a little bit cleaner. I don't know if I like it or not. It seems like it feels a little slippery slope-ish to me. Like, how far do you want to go to change old cards to make them work in digital? And it makes me a little bit worried that if you go too far down that path, that it could lead to some unintended consequences. Although in this case, I think most of the time it's not going to have a negative impact. But let us know in the comments what you think about this one, because I still really haven't made up my mind where I stand on it. Anyway, we got one fish mail today, and I'm curious what you guys think on this one. This one comes from at NarfAnRA on Twitter. Says, do you think Wizards has been doing a good job of tying standard sets together mechanically wise, or would you say that we still have a ways to go as far as making cards feel synergistic seems? Not sure about that last part of it, but do you feel like Wizards is doing a good job tying together standard sets mechanically now?
Nah.
Like, not what even that, close. Like
I think this is back to the block structure, like, kind of deal, right? Where you have a mechanic, and then you have more support for it, and then more support
kind of
for
builds
it,
on
and
it.
There's some cohesive thing. I feel in standard, it's one set shots currently. Like, whatever you saw in Edge is whatever you're getting for spacecraft, and that's it. And even then, like, the one set shot isn't even doing anything. And everyone's just playing good stuff piles for the most part. And I feel we've been like that for a while. Like, most decks are good stuff decks. And once in a while, you get highly synergistic decks. As opposed to every deck is a highly synergistic thing. The staples across decks is very high. Like, you know, the same good cards get played. It's not like there's removal for this kind of deck and there's removal for that kind of deck. It's kind of the same removal that we play in all decks. I think that's very bad, because I think most cards see no play, and that's bad, right? Like, the only way you actually interact with any meaningful amount of new cards is playing limited, right? If you played Commander, there's like three cards in Spider-Man for you, maybe, in the right archetypes. If you play standard, you know, TBD, but probably there's like 3 to 5 cards that you'll ever see playing standard. And then that's it. Every other card just goes to bulk immediately and is saved for something else. And I think that's very bad, right? So I think they need to make more synergistic cards and really make them strong, but balance them. So, like, your full synergy Spider-Man deck competes with your full synergy Edge deck, which, you know, competes with your full synergy Bloomburrow deck. In reality, what happens is, like, full synergy Bloomburrow deck destroys everything, and then that's it, right? You see nothing else. That'd be mice.
Cough.
That'd be mice, right? Like, that's it, right? So, I don't know how they could do this, but I would like to see more cards in standard being played.
I would also like to see more cards in standard being played, but go ahead, Grim.
I still miss 2-set blocks. I think 2-set blocks were perfect, right? Like, we don't have to deal with the dragon's mazes with the 3-set block. We just get 2 solid size blocks, and that would give you more of more support for the mechanics, right? So, like, example, I like the Spider-Man set, but I think the shortcomings of the set comes from the fact that it's too small of a set. And I wish if there was more cards, like Final Fantasy, we got the world because it's like 600 some cards, right? 500 some cards. But then if Spider-Man was more than like 100, 150 cards, we would get more web slinging, more of everything. And then the mechanic would feel more fleshed out.
Yeah, I tried to build a villains deck recently, and I was like, boy, there is just like not that many villains. Like, I wish there were more villains to actually build, like, a functional deck out of this theme. And it made me think, well, it'll probably work sort of in limited, especially the pick two limited. But, yeah, I do wish it could be more fleshed out. I will give Wizards some credit. I think they do try in this world of a bunch of different IPs, only one set for each set, I guess is how you'd put it. I think they try to tie it together. I remember when Final Fantasy came out thinking, oh, it's kind of cool that the Chocobo synergized with birds from Bloomburrow, for example. We see little bits like that, but it's definitely not like it was when we had blocks that build on each other. Although I've been wondering over the weekend, do you think blocks are like stealthily coming back with these Marvel sets? I almost wonder if we're going to see... Because we know we're getting several Marvel sets. Mero said we're getting all the Soul Stones. So whether it's four sets or six sets, who knows how they divide them up. But we're getting several Marvel sets. Do you expect them to kind of be like an old Magic block where they all sort of like thematically time together? We get a Soul Stone in each. The land cycle's completed throughout all these Marvel sets. Or do you think they're just still going to be just standalone but Marvel?
I see that maybe some of that stuff gets completed, right? Like maybe like the land cycle or something like that, right? But like, why would Iron Man be web-slinging, right? Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, there's Captain America has no reason to web-sling, right? So I think that,
it's
sure,
a multiverse,
it
would be... It's a multiverse where Captain Marvel web-slings.
You know what? Maybe. And maybe you could somehow spin that. But like, I mainly am more so, like, thinking it's going to feel only like a block in, like, the fact that it's just Marvel and that's the only thing that ties it together. Because I think, like, mechanically, right, like, it just, this is where if you have a Spider-Man set, you need more web slingers. You need more of everything. Villains, I think villains you can do because, you know, everything can be a villain, right, from here on out. Heck, you could even do it on in-universe villains as well, right? And I hope rampaging Baloth or, like, Errata, I don't know why that happened. If anything, what they could have done is gone back and changed, like, Nicol Bolas to a villain, right? They go back and they change some of the in-universe. That's an Errata or an update that I think they should have done. I don't know where this rampaging Baloth came from today. Like, so I didn't even know that happened, by the way.
Yeah,
I would be so mad if they released an X-Men set and they're like, your mechanics are mayhem and web slinging. And I'm like, oh, right. And if they reuse the same treatments, like, they're allowed to reuse one treatment. OK, like, they can take the comic book art. Yeah. But if it's the same set of showcase treatments and they apply it to my X-Men set, I will be so mad. Like, you don't understand. OK, you, like, I would be so mad that they phoned it home on X-Men. So I think the fact that they're all Marvel is meaningless. You know what I mean? It's like Outlaws and Aether Drift and Bloomburrow, they're all WotC. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Okay, whatever, right? Like, it doesn't really mean anything. And if they somehow, the only thing that ties them together should be like the Infinity Stones or something. You know, like some little crossover nod. But they should be distinct sets. And if they reuse the mechanics or treatments, then they're going to flop. So I trust that Wizards will do the right thing and not scuff my X-Men. You never know. Maybe they're like, these are the perfect four showcase treatments we'll use for the next 12 sets.
Every set.
Here's Wolverine with a spider web border. You know.
Anyway, I think that's all we have time for today. Richard, how do people send in fish mail for next week's episode?
All right, hit us up at MTG Goldfish with the hashtag MTG Fishmail, and we'll get to your questions on air.
And that brings us to the end of episode 553 of the MTG Goldfish podcast. So Richard Krim, thanks for hanging out. Thanks to everyone for listening. Thanks to Card Conduit for supporting the show. And we'll be back next week to talk about whatever goes on in the world of Magic. So until then, have an amazing week, everyone. And this is the crew signing out.